Welcome to Three Skulls Tavern, a channel devoted to tabletop role-playing games by Free League Publishing. This show is sponsored by Worldmill, online server hosting for the Foundry Virtual Tabletop. To support the show, head over to patreon.com/MattK. For a minimum of $2 per month, you get access to a ton of extra content.
Hello, welcome back to episode 10 of my Forbidden Land solo game. In the last session, things kind of got better for Yubi in one respect, but got worse in another respect. Yubi was able to sleep and regain all of her lost attributes, but in the process, someone came in and stole Udo's backpack, which had some supplies that probably would have been quite useful. And that's where we left it. She's trying to get Udo, who is in a very bad way, who's got about 2 more days left in him before he dies, to a village, which isn't too far away. She's a little bit concerned about a grey bear that put him in this state, catching up to them, when it gets back to its cave and discovers that Udo isn't there. And yeah, that's where we left it. That's where I'm going to pick up. So, we left it where it was noon of the first of Winter Rise, which is, there's actually a holiday between the end of Fall Wane and Winter Rise. And basically in this game, between every season, there is a major festival. In fact, I think there might be festivals even in between all 8 of the months. But there's certainly one in between these two, and it's called Rot Day. We might come back to that in a bit. But basically, this is where we are. It's now technically the first day of winter. There is a light snow of kind of in the air, settling on the ground. And I'm going to go back and say, there's a couple of things I want to go back and just retrospectively change slightly about the narrative from the last session. One is that because of the snowfall that had happened during this morning phase while she was sleeping, when she woke up, she would have been able to see the footprints of the hunters as they had kind of like grabbed Udo's backpack and had left. So if she wants to go and try and track them down and get Udo's backpack back, it should be relatively easy for her to track them because she can follow their footprints in the snow, assuming they don't try and clear their tracks or anything like that. So that's an option available to her, assuming it doesn't get warm all of a sudden and the snow starts to melt. The second thing is that I basically went through and I determined exactly what had been stolen from Udo, and I hadn't really thought about what was in his backpack exactly. So I went through his inventory. I first actually in Foundry duplicated his character sheet and called the duplicate Udo's backpack. So I had a copy of his character and all of his gear, more importantly. And I went through his gear list and thought, what would make sense for there to be in his backpack and what would make sense to have still been on his person? And effectively, I left him with his cloak, because that would have been wrapped around him to keep him warm. She definitely would have taken his blanket out of his backpack and wrapped him in that. So his blanket was not in his backpack, it was around him. And his dagger, or a knife, he has a dagger or a knife, that would have been kept probably just on a sheath, in its sheath, like at his hip, I imagine. But everything else, including his axe, I mean, she wouldn't put him to sleep, tuck him in with a blanket, and leave an axe at his side. It's just like a big bulky thing. In fact, the knife doesn't make a lot of sense, but I'm just kind of leaving it in there just so it's not everything gone, but it is pretty much everything else. He had a full water skin, which at this stage we're near a river. It doesn't really make much of a difference for that. But he actually didn't have any food anyway, so the food being gone is I kind of made a big point of that, like the food being gone. There never was any food from Udo anyway. But maybe Yubi forgot about that. Maybe she's thinking, oh, I think he had some food in his backpack. So it's making it even more, she might be expecting there to be food in there. But all the rest of the stuff that he had like a set of flint and steel. He had a set of lockpicks. He had a lantern. And I think that was mainly it. Those are all inside the backpack. Oh, and 4 pelts from from the deer, when they caught the deer. So all of that stuff is gone in the backpack. So as Yubi is discovering all this, as she's realizing their supplies are very low, they need food, and she also still needs to get Udo to safety, there's this kind of warring thing going on in her mind of do I pursue and pursue the thieves that stole Udo's backpack to try and get it back, because there might be food in there, but potentially waste time, which might end up in Udo dying, or do I press on and ignore what's just happened, chalk it up to bad luck, and just keep going? And I really think that she would press on to get Udo to safety, mainly because she's got all the stuff that she needs. She can get food from the forest. Remember, she's a hunter, and she even has Path of the Forest as a talent, which I had a look at in between sessions and realized that it means she's able to forage. She's able to get a success at foraging without having to by spending a willpower point. She's got sitting on quite a few willpower points too right now. So I think I'm going to play it that way, where, you know, if she needs food, she's gonna spend a quarter day to do that, to do foraging, to do some hunting, to find it. And I think that's what we're going to do right now. She's thinking about food. She's hungry. She knows that she's not going to get far without food. So she's going to... Oh, is she? She's eaten. I rolled for her food, and we rolled a negative number on it. Or like we rolled a one on it last session. So she's used the last of her food. It's all gone now. So she's not hungry yet. So maybe she can hunt or forage when she gets hungry again, and she's going to push on now, trying to put some distance between her and the cave. So that's what we're going to do. So jumping over to Foundry, we can see here that. That we're in this hex here, and the target really is this kind of slightly transparent village, which I've put here, which is where she thinks this village is. And we're near the river. I've mentioned that she can't really carry Udo very well, but she needs to make a raft. And to make a raft, she's going to do what she tried to do before, make a crafting roll. However, I'm going to rule that there are things in this house that's been, you know, that the bear had come in and slaughtered everybody where all the people were slaughtered by this bear, that she can probably use to help build a raft, like some furniture. Maybe there's like the frame of a bed or something like that, and it's going to make her job a little bit easier. And just how much easier is it? I'm going to ask the Oracle actually, and ask, and we're going to like slightly put the odds in the favor of a yes here. But I'm going to ask the Oracle: is there material that Yubi can use for a raft in the remains of this house? Again, we're adding one success to whatever I roll here. It's a wash, so it's a yes but. The yes but is going to be, yes, there's material in here, but there's not much of it. So the way I was thinking about this was, if it was a yes but, I would give her a plus one modification. If it was a normal yes, she'd get a plus two modification. If it was yes and, then be like really good materials inside that she could use, and she'd get a plus three modification to her crafting roll to make a new raft. And we're going to go with the same thing that I said before, which is that if I make a failure on this crafting roll, she's still going to build a raft, but it's not going to last long. And I'm going to have to ask the Oracle every single hex or change of shift, depending on how it works exactly, whether it's sinking. And I'm probably going to stack in favor of it saying, yes, it's likely to, because it's kind of shoddy workmanship. So... she's going to spend an entire quarter day doing a crafting roll to make this raft. So I'm going to roll her crafting roll. She gets a plus one modifier for finding stuff inside the house, and I'm going to make the roll here. And look at that, two sixes. Really lucky there. So she's crafted a raft. It's not a failure, and with the extra success, I'm going to say she's managed to make something quite useful, and she's even made, like, she's managed to make, like, an oar of some kind, and, Yeah, it's going to float really well for some. Like maybe there was like a tree felled nearby that they were going to be using for the people that had lived here were going to be using for firewood. They hadn't had a chance to chop it up into firewood, and so she was able to kind of maybe use some of those for some really good flotation supports underneath, you know, the frame of a bed or whatever she was using. So she's basically made a fairly sturdy, fairly good raft with those two successes. So. That's good news. That's the first good roll, it feels like, in a very long time in this campaign. So she spends that quarter day. We're going to move the clock along here to make that take up the entire quarter day. So it's now gone between daytime and evening. It's 6 p.m. It's starting to get dark. But again, because she is a goblin, she's going to press on and she's going to get on this raft. She's going to put Udo on this raft and she's going to start traveling upstream. So... we are going to have her move into this hex as sort of its dusk is drawing near. I'm also going to take off another progress ticker on my timer for the bear. It's kind of like a progress clock if you are familiar with Powered by the Apocalypse or Forged in the Dark. But yeah. So I'm progressing it, by the way, with certain results, narrative results that might take place or certain periods of time taking place, just where it narratively feels appropriate to progress that clock. So she moves into this new hex. We're going to do the usual thing. The first thing we do is we roll for Lead the Way, which is a survival roll. So if I open up UB Sheet and click on Survival, there's no modifier for this, but we're just going to do a straight roll. Now, that's a failure, which would, and I'm not going to be able to push this, that would mean I roll for a mishap. However, this is the one thing I did realize, is that she has this talent called Path of the Forest, and at rank one, it says that when you forage, hunt, or lead the way, you succeed automatically if you spend a willpower point. You can roll first and spend the point if you fail. That's exactly what I'm going to do. So she has 5 willpower points. I'm going to spend one of them for her to succeed at that finding the path. Lead the way roll. So now I'm going to ask the Oracle if there are any encounters in this new hex. So again, we bring this up, roll that. We've got a no but. So if I bring up here my GM screen and look at the lookups, with the no but, it means I find loot. Roll on the simple carried finds. So maybe as she's kind of going up the river, she sees the remains of a camp near the river, and there's something, and she just wants to quickly look. Oh, maybe there's some supplies there. Maybe there's something that they can use. So she quickly goes to the shore. We'll say it's on the north side of the river, and let's see what she finds. So I'm going to go here to the simple carried finds, click on that. And as you can see there, she finds, 1 second, because it hasn't updated. This is interesting. Interesting. You can't see it on the screen, unfortunately, because it's whispering the result just to me and not to everyone. But it basically says that she finds a copper crown, which is a bit unusual. Maybe there's like a dead body here or something, and like an animal had killed somebody. But she finds a copper crown, so she's going to take the copper crown and put it in her inventory. Because maybe she can sell that for, or trade it for something, for, you know, healing services for Udo. But yeah, that could come actually in handy. So I'm going to go to the items list here in the items directory in Foundry. Go down to, I believe it's probably under gear. And then under gear, we might have trade goods. Yeah, trade goods and... no, I'm just going to type in crown here and see what we come up with. Nothing. Good. So I'm going to go to gear here. I'm going to go to add a plus here. And we're going to just write in here, weight is probably going to be light because a crown isn't going to be very light. We're going to call it a copper crown. And what I can see from the, which you can't see on the screen, but is the value of it is 7 silver. So we're going to go here to, I guess, craft and supply price. Put 7 silver in there. There we go. All right. Normal item. Yeah, it's not special artifact or anything like that. Okay. Oh, wait. It says the weight is normal, actually, not light. So We're going to give it a normal weight, and that is going to put her at her maximum encumbrance. So she's not over-encumbered at the moment, but it is maximum encumbrance, and it's going to be inside of her backpack. She's definitely packing that in her backpack. Okay, so that's all that happens in this hex. We're halfway through, so again, if I go to Foundry and I drag this along halfway, we can move two hexes on a river. So we're going to move one more, and in this one, because of how the river looks on the map, I've got to make a decision on exactly which hex we're going to be going with. We're going to go up slightly and just go along here. And as she goes here, again, we're going to do the usual lead the way survival roll. So we'll do that here. That's another failure, and again, she's going to spend a willpower point to turn that into a success. And she's got three willpower points left. We're going to ask the Oracle, is there an encounter in this hex? Three successes. Whoa. Okay. Yes, but roll RE. Roll the random encounter with a -2 to the keep watch roll. So she's so focused on the river maybe and thinking if something's coming up that she gets a -2 to her keep watch roll. And by the way, that means its enemies would spot her first. So let's roll first to see what the encounter is going to be. For this one, I'm using the general encounter oracle rather than the official adventure site, like an adventure site. Or no! I am using the actual encounters from the game. So I'm going to click here on Forbidden Lands random encounters. We're on a I think we use lake for these. I think for river you still do forest or wherever we're in. So I'm going to click on the forest one, and we'll see what we come up with. Again, it's not showing up on the chat log, which is a little bit unfortunate. Revealed to everyone. Ah, there we go. There we go. Okay, I just need to right click on it. Tool in the woods. We've had this one already. This is one of the very first random encounter I rolled, so I'm actually going to re-roll just for a bit of. Just for a bit of variety. So hit that forest one again. And I think this is another one we've had. Wow. The second one I've rolled is the Ruins of Old, which is where you come across some old ruins. And again, just for variety, I mean, it's a bit strange that I'm rolling, you know, the two of the three that I've had so far, I've re-rolled two of them. So a bit strange there. I'm going to just re-roll it one more time. Okay, and here we've got a different one. The Dead Brother. So I'm going to open this, and I'll read... I'm going to ignore the rest of the text and only read the italicized text here. You find the decayed remains of an unfortunate wanderer in front of you. The ravens and wild animals have already done their part, and the body is just about hacked to pieces. I mean, she just found a copper crown on another... we've said like a campsite where there was a body or like I've said that there was like a body there. So she might be thinking, okay, maybe there's an animal here that's attacking people. I'm going to go and I'm going to look at this. I'm going to go look at this corpse and see if there's anything I can find. So she's going to pull the raft over again, and she's going to, head over, scare off the ravens, the crows, and approach the body. And she's going to basically look, you know, shuffle through its pockets. She's going to see if there's a bag nearby, that sort of thing. And I do actually know about this encounter because we did have this random encounter in the full campaign I ran on the channel last year. So I do know that by actually touching the body... well, in fact, maybe we'll have her roll a perception roll. A scouting roll, I should say. With a negative modifier because she's not necessarily expecting anything. So... especially because something has just happened. So I'm going to roll a scouting roll for her, and I'm going to give her a -1 modifier. Yeah, so it's a failure. She doesn't, and this is a, what do you call it? A passive roll. So this isn't something she's able to push. I'm just rolling to see if she notices something slightly off about this dead body. She doesn't. So, yeah. It says here, I'm going to ignore the top bit because we don't really know what his name was or anything like that, but it says any adventurer who touches the corpse will be infected by a demonic plague. The disease is now a lot weaker with a virulence rating of 3. During the course of the infection, the victim will experience strong hallucinations, seeing twisted demons instead of people. The corpse also has a simple bronze medallion with the sigil of the Rust Brothers. So she's going to take the medallion, which I'm going to... I'll look up later exactly like what that's worth or anything. So, and like how heavy it is. So we're going to go into her gear here, and we're going to... I mean, she's getting... Her gear is getting quite full. I forgot that she has a small tent. But I'm going to just quickly hit a plus here on her gear and add a bronze medallion. I'm going to give it a weight of... I'm going to give it a weight of tiny, actually. I'll figure out how much it's worth or anything like that. Bronze medallion, and then I'm going to put here by... effects, a sigil of the Rust Brothers. So inscribed, right click to edit, inscribed with the sigil of the Rust Brothers. Okay, so she's got this bronze medallion now. I've made it tiny just because a medallion shouldn't really weigh very much at all. And she pockets, she maybe pops it in her backpack as well. What she doesn't realize is that she now has contracted a demonic plague. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have a quick look at the rules for, I'm going to look up the rules for disease. And as soon as I found them, I'll show them on the screen here. So... Disease. When exposed to a disease, you need to roll an opposed roll for endurance against the virulence rating of the disease. This is called a sickness roll. A typical disease has a virulence of 3, but there are diseases with much higher ratings. If you fail, you fall sick, which has several effects. We'll figure that out in a second if we have any of those effects. So I'm going to just kind of move this off to the side here. I'm going to open up her her character sheets, and we're going to make an endurance roll. She has no skills in endurance. She's got strength of 3, so it's not a very good roll. Let's see what happens here. Yeah, no successes. So she's probably... I mean, the virulence rating needs to get at least one success, I believe. It's got two skulls on it, two ones. If you fail the roll, you fall sick. I'm going to... Just to make this a little bit more interesting, I think I'm going to rule that she gets sick from it, because that's going to be a little bit more interesting. She technically didn't succeed in an endurance roll. However, during an opposed roll, really, if you're doing something like somebody sneaking against a scouting roll, the sneak would have to be successful. So, like, the virulence would have to be a success normally. I would maybe think the virulence roll would have to be at least one success. And so you would need to, I don't know. Like, if you got ones, it's a hard one. It's a really hard one. I think you could kind of rule this either way. Technically speaking, I think strictly rules as written, quite possibly it would be that that you would need to have the virulence of the disease would need to have at least one success for it to be successful. But it did say that they would catch the disease if they touch them. So I'm kind of ruling it I'm ruling a little bit more perhaps harsh than maybe you could rule it, but also because it's interesting, and I think for this channel as well, it's nice to look at different aspects of the rules, and the disease rules are kind of interesting, so I wanted to kind of explore them. So I'm going to be giving her, I'm going to go under here to note, and I'm going to say that she has contracted a demonic plague. I'm going to say virulence rating 3. Opposed endurance roll. Okay, and what I'm going to do now is I'm going to look at the additional rules for the disease here. And it says the day after the infection, so she's sick now. The day after the infection, the disease breaks, at which time you suffer 1 point of damage to both your strength and agility. So it's not happening now. It's going to happen the following day. So right now we're saying it is about we're saying it was earlier 6 p.m. Then we're adding a couple of hours to it. So it's kind of like halfway through the evening phase. You can't recover strength or agility while you're sick. So that's interesting, except through magic. And you have to make another sickness roll once per day. Each failed roll means you suffer another point of damage to both strength and agility. If your strength is broken when sick, you die after another day if you don't get well before then. Wow. As soon as you succeeded a sickness roll, you are no longer sick. Stop rolling sickness rolls and recover your attributes normally. Other diseases. The sickness effects described above reflect a common but deadly disease. There are many other diseases that can have unique effects. Now, there wasn't actually anything, and it says here medical aid, there's a spell called Nature's Cure, which is very effective against disease. So in theory, if there's a druid at this village that she's trying to get to, she does actually, she just touched it, she's contracted this plague, she's not even aware that she's sick yet, right? And I think because it's a plague, there's a possibility that she's going to spread this plague at the village they're going to go to. So this is really going to make for some interesting kind of narrative in this game. And yeah, I think, yeah, so that takes us past the evening phase. So we're now in the, like getting into that hex, finding the encounter, keeping watch scouting roll. So I did actually roll that, and I guess technically to tell if it was, I rolled the scouting roll to see if she could tell if anything was off with the body. I could have used the -2 from that oracle roll to affect that scouting roll, and I didn't, but it doesn't matter anyway because she failed it. It couldn't have been a worse result. So we're now at midnight of the 2nd of Winter Rise. And she gets back onto her raft. I'm going to say that she's also now hungry. And she's going to travel upriver, hopefully find this village. And that's what she does. She travels, gets back on the raft, finds the fork in the river a little bit more upstream, and there certainly is a village ahead of her. So we're going to do a couple of things here. The first one I'm going to do is I'm going to do a lead the way roll, like I would normally. So that's a survival roll. She's got 2 success. She succeeds at that, so I don't need to spend a willpower point to have her automatically succeed to not have a mishap. I'm going to ask the Oracle if there's an encounter in this hex, but I'm going to bypass that for now because an encounter could be an adventure site. An adventure site can be a village, and I'm ruling that there is going to be an adventure site here. So rather than doing it that way, I'm just going to say that there is an encounter here, and the encounter is an adventure site, and the adventure site is the village. So I'm going to now, as Yubi, it's midnight, or we can say because she's traveling like through the hex, it's kind of in the wee hours of the morning. But because goblins are nocturnal as well, I'm going to say that, she's not trying to be stealthy whatsoever. She's just trying to get to this village. And so she is spotted by some of the residents of the village as she's coming up river. So several goblins by this time, like word has spread. Some goblins are coming to the side of the river to see who this is. And she calls out some words of greeting and asks for help as she kind of brings her boat in, bringing with her the plague. So let's very quickly roll up this village. And for this village, there's a couple of things I want to do here. The first one is there's a macro for Foundry now, which will roll a village automatically. So I click that and I get here that it's a hamlet of a population of 92. So it's quite small. The ruler is a weak despot. They've got a problem with night wargs, which is interesting. The claim to fame is that they've got some well-brewed beer that they make here. And the oddity is that it's muddy. So it's a muddy, muddy village. It's quite near a lot of rivers. So we can say that it's built like maybe even on the river slightly, like it's got some of these like stilts kind of keeping up part of it. So like it's really right on the river. In terms of institutions, it's got 2 smiths, which is interesting considering that there is, there are some mountains nearby, so maybe they've got some kind of trade deal going with some miners in the mountains, maybe. And there's a mill. Mill makes sense because it's on a river. Okay, then the second thing I'm going to do is I'm going to roll my own village generator, which I'm only rolling for a name. And it's also got, I think, an attitude too, which I might use. So I click that, and we're calling it Thornhill. So the name of this this hamlet is Thornhill, and we've got here that its attitude is open to contact, so I'm going to add that in here. This attitude, by the way, is from Twilight 2000. It's one of the settlement tables that you can roll on, and I really liked it, so I added them to to this. I think I may have modified it slightly. So they're open to contact, which is very interesting. Nightworks, and this one says missing people. So I'm going to add that and just put missing people, because that makes sense. They're being plagued by Nightworks, and perhaps some people have gone missing. Maybe they've gone to hunt for it, or maybe they've they've been dragged away or something. And I like the oddities and stuff that we've already got here, so I'm going to ignore the other ones from this one. So I've added those to here. I'm going to delete this one here. Okay, so I've added Thornhill to the map here. I can double-click on it if I want, and it brings up the details of it. It's got a little label and everything that I need. It's no longer vague. It is there, and this is what's happened. So one thing that we've seen is that there is a weak despot. And I'm not sure exactly what that means. I mean, a despot is somebody who's kind of... like a tyrannical ruler normally, somebody who's holding control in a quite aggressive way. Weak might mean something along the lines of them being physically weak. It could mean that their position has been weakened recently, and I think maybe we can say that. Maybe because of the Night Wargs, the people are quite unhappy about their ruler not doing enough to protect them and not being able to protect them from the Night Wargs. So there's something interesting going on here. I'm going to quickly roll my NPC generator to generate the details of this NPC. It's a goblin village. Whether I'm coming up with a masculine or a feminine name for this goblin, I think I might just flip a coin. In fact, I'll do a quick roll D2. On a 1, it's a feminine name. On a 2, it's a masculine name. So it's a feminine name. And Jezuka. Jezuka is the leader of this village. She is intolerant, and her goal is to spread faith. Interesting. We can maybe think that intolerance works, I think, well with faith. It can work well with faith if you think about like a zealot, and really kind of taking a hard line. And weak, we can say again, but I think we're going to go with her position has been weakened recently. And I think that's kind of we're going to end it very, very soon here. And in fact, we're going to bring the season to a close as well with this episode. And the way I want to kind of end it is thinking about as Yubi comes into this village of Thornhill, she calls out for help. And some people see that there's a goblin. They're open to, as we saw, they're open to, contact with other people. They're not immediately hostile, anything like that. She's a goblin, which helps as well. And so they greet her, they pull her on board, they comment on the strange raft that she's riding on. And then they see Udo, this kind of half-dead halfling. And, they bring him in, and... Yubi's going to help carry him in, so we're going to actually give Udo the plague as well as some of the people that are helping. So I'm going to kind of do this a little bit loose and narratively, and when we come back to this season, I do plan to have a second season of this and to come back to this game, but there are various reasons why I need to kind of end it where I'm ending it now. And we're gonna kind of just keep it a bit narrative and just say that she's had contact with a handful of other goblins and with Udo himself. And so this demonic plague is going to be spreading through this village. And remember, we said that not only is it a disease where it's going to cause harm to people in lowering their strength, etc. It's also going to be causing these visions, these hallucinations. So that's going to be interesting as well, especially with a religious, a tyrannical religious leader in charge of this village. When people start having, like, falling sick and having these strange visions and hallucinations, I think it's demonic anyway, but there's going to be a religious, there's going to be a religious connection made. And I've been reading a lot about the Middle Ages recently, and specifically been reading up on the witch trials that happened in the Holy Roman Empire in the sort of, 15th, 16th, 17th centuries. And immediately thinking of, there being a sort of like a witch hunt, a witch trial going on in this village. So that's the way my brain is starting to go. Those are the connections I'm making. And when you're playing solo, these are exactly the sorts of things you want to build on. If you're reading something, if you just watch something and a connection is made in your head, you absolutely want to run with it because it's going to, those are the things that kind of make it more interesting. And, that's probably the way I'm going to be going with this. So, yeah. She finds a friendly village. She is able to bring Udo in. Let's ask the Oracle as well. Just get to this kind of these details kind of squared away. Is there a healer in the... Well, actually ask, is there a healer in the village? And I think I think most villages would have a healer, so I'm going to put it, but they have a night warg thing. So I'm going to say that there's a plus one yes to this oracle roll. We've had a wash, so there's a yes, but. Yes, but. There is an oracle, but there's a healer in this town. But we can say that the healer is... is not currently in the village. The healer has gone out on an errand, perhaps, and isn't there, is expected back the next day. So, this means that Udo's going to get very close to dying before the healer comes back. There's going to be a very, very small window of opportunity to heal his critical. And then he's also contracted this plague. So there's another opportunity for him to die, because he's already broken. His strength is already broken. If he gets sick, and now, as we said, he can basically die very quickly from contracting a plague while he's already near death's door. And that kind of makes sense. Like, if somebody contracts the plague or a very serious illness and they're already nearly dead, it's gonna finish them off. So this could be the end of Udo because of this plague. So we're kind of leaving it on a cliffhanger here. Udo and Yubi have found the security they were looking for. They found the village that they were looking for. However, Yubi does not know this. She does not know she's contracted the plague. But we know, in the background here, that with our meta caps on, that things are about to get really, really bad for everyone in the village, including Udo and Yubi. So I'm going to leave it here. And just a couple of, I guess, one more comment on this is if Udo and Yubi do end up dying because of the plague, I have a whole village full of goblins here. And perhaps there can be some discussion with her and some other goblins to tell them about what she and Udo were doing. She's going to be fairly honest, I think, with people. She's got nothing to hide. She's going to tell them about the Grey Bear. And I think there's probably going to be the opportunity for somebody who has survived the plague to continue on with the adventure. So if they both die, I will be making a new PC towards the beginning of the second season to carry on the campaign. But yeah, I'm going to leave it there. So thank you very, very much for watching. If you have any comments on this, if you want to, mention anything on this video, please drop it in the comments below. You can also find me on social media. If you look at the ticker, which is just coming onto the screen now, you'll find links to all of my social media accounts. They're also hyperlinked in the description. But really, if you want to talk to me, Discord is the best place. So if you're a Discord user, hop onto the channel there or the server there. And let me know what you think. So thanks very much, and I'll catch you next time.